Welcome to Passing Years CAM Podcast, Conversations on Aerodigestive Management. This episode of CAM features your host, Dr. Kristen King, and guest, Jenny Opalinski, having a conversation about working within a team.
Welcome everyone listening in. We are here today to speak with Jenny Opalinski, a speech language pathologist who is at CareOne LTAC at Trinitas. CareOne is one of our centers of excellence, and Jenny was instrumental in applying for that center of excellence recognition. And Jenny, I want to talk with you a little about what you do in your facility, but really more kind of the interdisciplinary approach to working with patients with tracheostomies and how we can incorporate various types of treatments and all. But before we get into that, would you like to share anything about yourself and your history, how long maybe you've been at CareOne?
Yes, thank you so much for having me. I have been a medical speech therapist for about 10 years now. And I have worked in several hospitals and long-term acute care facilities in the New York, New Jersey area. I started off on a TBI unit, and I have been in my current position for about 4 years now. And PMV has been so instrumental, especially in helping me to develop an interdisciplinary team and helping to work with my coworkers to really better our care for our patients.
Do you mind sharing a little bit about the type of patients that you get in your facility?
Yes. So we are a 22-bed facility, and most of our patients are trach vent patients. They generally come to us on a ventilator, and our main focus is ventilator weaning. So we get everybody from TBIs, you know, from all sorts of different cardiac issues and other comorbidities, but their main diagnosis is usually respiratory failure.
And when they come to you, are they sometimes that difficult to wean patient population, or are they coming from acute care for the weaning process?
So both. Some patients are difficult to wean, and they come to us after having been on a ventilator for quite a while with multiple attempts to wean. And some will come to us already in the process of weaning.
And I only ask that to kind of clarify for those listening that you have basically a variety of patients in your patient population. And what we're going to talk about could fit either that patient coming from acute care or someone who's been maybe difficult to wean and had a longer process. Can you tell me a little bit about, in your facility, what actually initiates you getting involved with the patient? Like, how do they get you started and in the room?
So I am very involved in my facility, and anytime we have an admission, I will do a chart review, and I talk to the respiratory therapists, and we flag the patients that are appropriate, first of all, for a PMV trial. And then I look at patients and see where they are in terms of their swallowing and their diet, and see and speak to the staff, see if they are appropriate for a swallow evaluation as well.
How many of your patients would you say that you initiate? What percentage, I should say, of your patients do you initiate using a speaking valve with them?
Honestly, anybody who's ready. So during their stay, I would say 80% of patients at some point will be wearing a speaking valve. It is the patients that are very, very medically complex and really cannot tolerate it that do not get a trial, but we are very proactive. You know, our doctors, they love this program. So they come in, and if a patient does not have a PMV on, they say, where's their speaking valve? So that, you know, it's very encouraging to us, and our respiratory therapists are trained during orientation. They know what to look for. You know, I'm always, you know, they see me coming down the hall and they already know. They're like, okay, yes, we have a PMV order for, you know, whatever, 704.
So you mentioned two things that I want to ask you about. The first is you said if they're ready for it. What are some of the criteria you look for in the patient to say they're ready to use a valve?
So we look at their ventilator settings. Their PEEP sometimes, if it's too high, we will wait. If they are medically unstable, if they're having, you know, they're actively kind of working through something, we talk to the doctors and see if we think that this is a good time to initiate, or maybe they need a little bit of time to get to a place where they might be able to tolerate it better. We do not exclude people who are not always cognitively intact, because we do know that there are some benefits in using that PMV, and we are still actively trying to wean the those patients. So if they are able to tolerate, and we will do a trial and kind of watch very closely if their vitals are okay, if they do not look like they're in distress, then we try to continue and see where we can go and try to actively push to have them tolerate that placement for longer and longer each day.
You said something there I'm going to add a little note to, because mm-hmm. you mentioned if they're not cognitively intact. We get that question a lot. How intact does a person have to be, or how alert and like cognitively interactive with their environment, I'll say, you know, like they're just kind of a little bit more there. One of the things I want to share about that is a difficulty. It's very difficult to evaluate cognition with a voiceless patient. Oftentimes that cognitive level can be miscalculated or misjudged because the patient can't vocalize and participate in questions and show some of the awareness of things. Now they can be lower level, of course, than that, but just kind of as a side note that if you try to evaluate before you have a voice, then that is impacting those responses and your ability to truly assess the patient. But when you were talking about assessment, you also said something I wanted to talk a little bit about, because you mentioned a patient not being able to tolerate using a valve. Can we kind of touch base on that a little? Like, first, what do you mean by not being able to tolerate? Because I know we try to work around that word so people understand the criteria for using and not using a speaking valve. So what do you mean by not tolerate?
So for us, I think we are pretty aggressive in our approach in terms of really trying with everyone. And I don't think there are certain parameters that we look at, like I mentioned, the PEEP maybe being too high, where we wait for that to come down. But we look at each patient as a whole, right? Because some patients may be very anxious and they might get panicked when you try a speaking valve on. And so it's hard for them to tolerate it because that's their barrier. Or we have patients who their secretions are just so copious. And many, many times the PMV actually helps when they have a lot of secretions. So we will kind of see what they do when we try it on. But sometimes we can't deflate the cuff because they just cannot handle it. And those patients who can't in the beginning, we don't always say, okay, that's it, we're not going to try again. We really watch them and we look at what they're doing and we see if we can kind of get their secretions under control, maybe do some sort of meds or something like that, and go back to it and see where they are. Or, you know, we talked end-stage COPD, where they're just not able to do it because of that. Those are things that might rule a patient out. But like I said, it has to be something like really stark for us to kind of give up on it.
So what you're talking about really is readiness to use the valve versus they're not necessarily unable to tolerate the valve. Perfect. It's really whether or not they're ready to use the valve. Like if they have too many secretions or the cuff can't be deflated or those types of parameters that affect someone's ability to use it. So one of the things we were going to talk about too was the interdisciplinary aspect of working with tracheostomy patients and the benefits we see for using, closing that system, restoring pressure. And so having a speaking valve on and using that valve during other therapies. Can you share first just a little of your experience about working interdisciplinary? I know in your facility, speech-language pathology is a small group.
Just me, actually.
I know. So it becomes even more critical to have that interdisciplinary approach, but it's applicable to everywhere. So Absolutely. Can you share a little bit about your experiences with that?
Sure. So when I started this program, you know, all the patients, when they get their voices back, and you know, there are tears and people love it and they love speaking to their family and they want to wear it all the time. But some patients they need that supervision initially. They, you know, can DSAT or they may have some issues. So you really do need to be able to be with them. And I am the only speech therapist there. So I couldn't dedicate that much time to everyone. So in my problem solving, I was like, it makes so much sense that everybody is part of this team. Everybody is participating in watching this patient. Everybody knows what the red flags are. You know, everybody knows when they have had enough or when to alert the RT, something like that. So we made sure that everybody's trained. And part of being that center of excellence was having a focus on that. You have a great, I think, CEU course that does focus on that interdisciplinary. So we made that mandatory for everybody. We made the stop criteria. We put it up on the wall. Everybody is aware of when they need to take the valve off. All our nurses are trained. Our family members, when they come in, they get education about it. So that really enabled us to make sure that those patients were getting that therapy. We're not just wearing the PMV for 15 minutes or a half hour, but when they could tolerate it, they were wearing it for longer lengths of time, you know, and PT and OT, everybody benefits, first of all, from the patient having a voice, being able to get that feedback from the patient, not having to try to figure out what they're mouthing, not knowing why they're anxious all of a sudden, or that they're in pain, or where the pain is, you know, so that is a huge benefit. Yes, but also those naturally restored pressures. And I think Dr. King, you could talk a little bit more about how that does improve their performance in physical therapy, you know, how they are able to maybe participate a little bit longer and get through those exercises more effectively.
I will share, because this podcast isn't really on the pressures, but I will share, we have several publications on that, and we have information that's really linked to the research and the work of Dr. Mary Massery, a physical therapist who's done quite a bit of work in the area of like that inner thoracic and the inner abdominal pressures and how those help with postural control and trunk support and how the glottis or the vocal folds are a part of that system, and that you need to be able to engage the vocal folds in order to control and regulate those pressures. We need that postural control, that trunk support for sitting up, transferring bed to chair, bed to wheelchair, being able to get back to walking and standing upright. Patients are at a state to be able to do that. So yeah, there's a lot of ties to that pressure regulation and mobility. And in your facility, I know you've used it a lot with physical therapy. Can you speak to that a little bit about how you've seen it used in your facility with like physical therapy and occupational therapy?
Yes. Well, just first of all, to say that it's just amazing how everything is interconnected, right? Everything kind of works together. And our patients are coming to us with that goal of weaning off the ventilator, but they have all these other goals also, and they're all tied together at the end of the day, right? It all kind of rests on that, getting them to breathe, but then they're going to walk, and then they're going to eat, and then they're going to speak, and all these things kind of go back to that breathing and those pressures and the control and everything. So in our facility, most of the time, you know, we will, if a patient is tolerating the speaking valve throughout the day, they're kind of wearing it all the time. But the patients who are not, generally we will have the RT, if they're on the vent, place it. And a lot of times when they're doing their physical therapy sessions, I think that having that PMV on, it helps with that stabilization like we talked about, and that trunk control. And a lot of these patients are bed bound. So when they do, they may not have been walking or ambulating or doing any sort of physical activity for quite some time, you know, so whatever sort of benefit they can get to help them get to a point where they are able to do those things again is number one, very motivating for the patient. But number two, it's natural, right? To have that kind of those pressures restored. This is what your body is used to, and this is what our goal is. So to be able to bring that into the therapy and have that there kind of, I think, pushes them forward and gets them a little closer, engaging all those muscles and all those parts of their body that they're used to, you know, to strengthen them and help them make that progress.
You're of course very right on that. And you made a critical point in how all the systems are interconnected. Mm-hmm. And all those goals are really interconnected, which is what brings us to that interdisciplinary approach, because we can't operate on an island or in a silo, because what we do impacts PT and OT, what they do impacts us. It all impacts respiratory therapy, nutrition. So the dietitian and their role, I mean, everyone on the team brings a piece, but also those goals overlap.
Exactly. And if you think about your activities of daily living, think about the things that you're doing. You're not just using, you know, one part of your body. You're not just focusing on the muscles in your legs. You know, you're going to be walking, so you need all those systems. Maybe you're going to be walking and having a chat with someone. So now you're including everything else. And that is just natural. That is life. And our goal with these patients is to get them back to, you know, quote unquote, their normal, or as close to it as we can, because I think it's very vulnerable for someone to be a patient in the hospital. They kind of wake up a lot of times and they've lost their ability to do the things that they do every day. And so the small things that we can give them to help them feel like themselves a little bit more are important. You know, it's scary to not have that.
I agree with you completely. And there's actually quite a bit of research that addresses the impact of the ICU and being in critical care, which is where a lot of these patients start. Right. On their recovery process. And we've often heard of ICU delirium and some of the things that can start to develop. And it's not just because of medications. It can, it's the location, it's the isolation that occurs. It's the voicelessness with some patients that occurs. It can be the lack of therapy because they're not mobile. They're not being shown, you know, some of those things, and to motivate them, it can really help to start restoring, like you said, some of those little things, you know, and get them going.
And their voice and being able to speak, you know, how terrifying is it? You wake up and you have all these wires and tubes and now you can't communicate, you know, and nobody's really, you're not understanding what people are telling you. That's scary. So we really try to take a whole patient approach, and we try everything we do kind of intertwines, right? So you're seeing me for speech therapy, but you're using your speaking valve, and that's going to carry over into your physical therapy or your occupational therapy, you know. And we've kind of used that model to introduce respiratory muscle training in our facility also, where I am using respiratory muscle training with the goal of improving the patient's swallow. But the physical therapist is also using respiratory muscle training with the goal of improving airway clearance, you know, and the RT is using respiratory muscle training with the goal of helping to wean. And it is those same exercises, but we approach it from our individual perspectives. It does help with patient carryover. You know, if I am not able to make sure that they do their full five sets of five times a week, I'm not worried because somebody else is there. And they're also motivated to help them engage and to do that. And I think it's important for us as medical professionals to understand the perspective from another clinician or another healthcare professional, understand what their goals with the patient are, because if we can help them with that in our therapy, it is only beneficial to the patient. Like I said, we want to get these patients back to doing the things that they were doing, and we want it to feel like it's always felt for them. I think that approaching therapy in that way helps the patients to be motivated too, because they want to do this. They don't want to do, you know, it's hard sometimes to do a couple of reps of this and you don't know how that exercise is going to carry over into your everyday. So maybe doing those reps, but then also putting them in a setting where they have to now use, you know, apply that therapy, apply the benefits of that therapy, as they would in their day-to-day life, helps them to understand the importance and helps them to carry over also in terms of doing these exercises, maybe on their own or independently.
So can you give an example of a time that you either co-treated or incorporated what we think of as speech therapy into another therapy?
So let's think about occupational therapy, because I don't think we've talked about them yet, but the goal for this patient in particular was bringing hand to mouth. Great. So when you feed yourself, you, of course, bring your hand to your mouth. The goal for me was working on safe swallow strategies. So we were training this patient to be independent in taking small bites, small sips, and alternating their solids with their liquids. You know, very functional very natural. Like they're eating, and now they're addressing those occupational therapy goals. You know, they're addressing their speech swallow goals, and they're not even thinking about it as therapy, which I think is great because that's when I feel like they participate the best. And then thinking about respiratory therapists, this patient has a lot of secretions. You know, once we deflate their cuff, they start coughing, we put on the PMV. Now they're able to cough and clear their secretions. Great. So let's introduce respiratory muscle training. And I often work, you know, with the RTs for inspiratory muscle training, where we use the trainers, the devices directly on the trach, and they'll attach that and they will go through their training. And so respiratory is working still on airway clearance. And, you know, I'm working on having that cough support, but also improving breath support for speech, for voice, when they do use that PMV. So again, very functional, very natural. And it's the same maybe approach that we're taking, but we have our own individual goals that we are targeting.
You know, I just thought of something while you were describing that. Respiratory muscle training years ago, people used to think it was not in the realm of speech language pathology, that it was respiratory.
Right.
You know, it was respiratory therapy.
It's respiratory. But like we talked about before, everything is connected, right? So I am not doing respiratory muscle training with the same goals as maybe PT and RT, but kind of, because they're still interconnected. But when I use respiratory muscle training in my therapy, I'm going to use it as a modality to address my speech and swallow goals.
And that's part of what I was thinking. It used to be thought historically, you know, we had these silos and respiratory muscle training was under respiratory, but I think you've given really good support and understanding. And today people know respiratory muscle training is done by speech language pathologists, but I think it's a really good example of how therapies and things that we may not think of as being speech are, because they support the systems or the subsystems that are involved in what we work on. So I was bringing that up because you said breath support for speech, or cough effectiveness, which is going to help protect the airway during swallowing and help clear secretions and those types of things that can assist. So there's a lot of things we sometimes have to think outside the box a little.
Yeah, I think it's
incorporate
just
everything.
Right. I think it's just like the PMV. There have been facilities where I have worked where PMV is just a speech thing, right? This patient's not going to talk. We're not going to try a PMV on them. So I think that's your opportunity for education. That's your opportunity to say, well, hey, look at this research. And this is why it would be important for other therapists to also incorporate this as part of their therapy. Why wouldn't you use a PMV if you are a physical therapist? You know, why wouldn't you use it if you are a respiratory therapist? Because look, these benefits and these goals are appropriate to you also. So if we all work together and take that, you know, that whole patient approach, it's again beneficial to everyone.
And since you mentioned these benefits, I'm going to list them really quickly to kind of share of some of the areas, because some people do think like what you're thinking. It says it's a speaking valve or swallowing and speaking valve, but the research has shown it helps with weaning, which you've already mentioned. Mm-hmm. It assists with restoring speech and communication, voice aspect, swallowing that you mentioned, but it also helps with things like taste and smell. And reduced taste and smell is seen in patients with tracheostomies, with open tracheostomies, and that can affect appetite, which can affect nutrition and really have this domino effect. And so restoring that taste and smell can be critical. Restoring cough effectiveness, throat clear effectiveness, as we've already kind of talked about. It also helps, and the biggie is it helps restore pressures, subglottic pressure for swallowing, which can help with that hyolaryngeal excursion. It helps restore pressure in the respiratory system, which is what helps with the cough and the other things. Yeah. But in restoring those pressures, that can assist with improved lung recruitment. Now, the research has shown that that's not one of the listed benefits, but there is a lot of research that's come out. There were several publications by Dr. Annalisa Soot and colleagues on the effectiveness of the valve in line and helping with lung recruitment and diaphragmatic muscle function, because it helped restore and improve that ability to recruit everything into the breath.
And that's huge, that your diaphragm is your main muscle of breathing. If you're able to engage that diaphragm and think about the patients who are on ventilator support, you know, who have a ventilator breathing for them, you know, those muscles of respiration, they weaken just like any other muscle if they're not being used. So being able to engage them, to have them active, is a huge benefit.
Yeah. And if you've got a patient who's difficult to wean, or who is just on a ventilator and you're planning to wean, whether it's a difficult wean or not, being able to recruit the alveoli into better breaths, recruiting all the muscles into that function, is going to help with that weaning process. The reason I brought up the research was just to say you're incorporating that into your practice.
Yes.
And it's going to just add to the body of evidence as far as what our patients benefit from.
Yes.
So that's always really good when people can do that. We've actually had some podcasts on research and incorporating it into clinical practice, because it's something you can do.
It's so important. It really is, because we base our practice on the evidence, right? We base our practice on research, and there are many things that we still don't know. And if you're a medical professional, that is kind of what we do. We evolve based on the new evidence. So there's always something new. Our practice now is not what our practice was 10 years ago, right? Best practice changes along with what we learn. And so I think research is so critical.
And I want to link that back to our discussion, which is on the interdisciplinary aspects, because if you're doing research, you can also potentially do it with your other disciplines. There may be something you can look at with PT or OT or both of them, with your dietitian. There may be nutritional aspects you could look at. If you've got like a recreation therapist, there's just a number of things that could be looked at.
So many things. Like for us, we are looking at cough strength, right? And so cough strength is relative to basically all of us, yes, as medical professionals working with ventilator patients. But I need my team. Like there is no way I would be able to do it on my own. So the fact that I have other disciplines, also I need to learn from them, because I don't know everything. As a speech therapist, I was trained as a speech therapist and I know what I know, but there is so much more to learn. And just like there are doctors with different specialties that work together on a team, like you need the other healthcare professionals to kind of fill in those gaps. And there are always gaps, because no one can know everything.
Well, that's true. And I'll also share with you saying that we're talking about patients with tracheostomies. It is always, or should always be, an interdisciplinary approach.
Absolutely.
Because if nothing, at the lowest number, we're looking at least the respiratory therapist and the speech language pathologist working together with these patients, and both bring critical skill sets to the assessment, to the treatment, you know, any interventions we're doing with the patient.
Yes.
And through the last while during the podcast, we've been talking about PT, OT, and the other therapies, but it's not, you definitely can't see these patients in a silo. There's just too much going on.
Yeah. And my RTs are wonderful, and I am grateful for them every day, because you know what, and I'll be honest, it's not always easy to work with other disciplines, because we all have our goals and we all have to do what we have to do. We have a lot of patients to see. There is always too little time. But when you, I think, approach people and get to know them and explain to them, I think at the end of the day, we're all medical professionals, and we are medical professionals because we want to help these patients. And so if you can bring the research and you can support, you know, what your goal is, to kind of work together and then explain why it's beneficial, I think most of the time people will be open to that. But it's hard because sometimes disciplines will keep to themselves and it's not always easy to break the ice in between them. And it's not always easy to ask for help, you know, and I am a person who does not like to ask for help for myself, but for in my mind, I'm not asking for help for myself. I'm asking for help for someone else who really needs the help. And so I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And you can always try.
Well, that's a really good point that you can always try. It doesn't hurt to ask. And I'm going to share one tidbit that I think is important to clarify. And then I'm going to ask you for your, like, if you could give one final thought, then I'm going to come to you for that. Because the piece that I want to share, I think what I want to touch on, that we're interdisciplinary and multidisciplinary, because we hear both terms and we hear them used interchangeably, and they're not really the same term. Mm-hmm. And we've been discussing interdisciplinary, and the primary difference is multidisciplinary just means you have a lot of disciplines involved. What you've been sharing and emphasizing as important is interdisciplinary. And what it means, inter means between the disciplines. It doesn't mean a lot of disciplines. It means between the disciplines. And it means that we work on things together and we work on goals that overlap, incorporating skill sets that assist the other disciplines, and they're going to be doing the same. We're working together as a team. We're not just all there. And so that's what I wanted, because I know people throw around, you'll see things that say they're multidisciplinary or they're interdisciplinary. And there is a difference. Multi just means many disciplines, and interdisciplinary means between the disciplines, meaning you're working together. And it's a little bit different picture. And so I've appreciated your emphasis during the podcast on that interdisciplinary, because I think it's very critical for that patient recovery.
I agree. And I think you said that really well. You know, there are all these sayings about how teamwork is better and there's no I in team. But at the end of the day, when you think about approaching something, a problem, anything, and you have input from different people who may have a different background and may have different ideas, it's a good thing. It can help you become a better clinician. It can help you adjust maybe your goals to reflect a little bit more what everyone else is working on. And at the end of the day, that is going to be very beneficial for our patients, you know, because we want to help them. We want to support them. We want them to progress as much as they can. Anything that we can do with that goal in mind is great. And I think it also just makes for a better work setting when people are working together. It can be intimidating at first, but we're all people at the end of the day. And like I said, we all have that same goal to help these patients. So being able to talk something through with someone from another discipline is a huge, huge benefit for me. You know, I can understand things a little bit better and I can understand why they're doing what they're doing and where they're coming from. And then I also know how I can help them. And at the end of the day, that's helping the patient. And that is what we're here for.
And I think that is the perfect spot to end, because I agree, in the end, that's what we're all here for, is to help the patients. So Jenny, I want to thank you so much for joining me on the podcast and talking about interdisciplinary care of our patients. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. It was such a pleasure to be here.
Thank you for listening to this episode of CAM. We are happy to offer continuing education credit through ASHA for this podcast. To receive credit, please go to www.passymuir.com/podcast and click on the continuing education link under this episode. Then you will either create an account or log into your existing education portal account. Complete the quiz and course evaluation for your podcast episode. Your certificate will be available for download once completed.